Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 18th of April. This hour of the program, late in March, the American Association of University Women released its annual wage gap analysis. It's titled The Simple Truth, and it includes the gender pay gap broken down by state, race, ethnicity, education, and age. The AAUW Director of Research says the gender pay gap has not budged in the past 10 years. Everybody's familiar with the 77-cent statistic because it's been around so long. What's especially problematic is that even when you compare women and men in the same jobs, we still find gaps, and that's unacceptable. The Simple Truth also offers action that governments, employers, and individuals can take to solve this systemic problem. One such step they outline is passing fair pay legislation. House Republican leadership has kept the Paycheck Fairness Act from being put up for a vote. Opponents say the legislation opens businesses for unfounded lawsuits and that there are other reasons that men might earn more, including differences in education, experience, and job tenure. In just a moment, we're trying to locate our guest, Lisa Matz will be joining us, Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. So we will be talking about that issue the first hour of the program as soon as we locate our guest. The second hour of the program, we have made a change in our programming because, as you probably know, the President and the First Lady will be in Boston this morning for a memorial service for those who were killed and terribly injured at the Boston Marathon bombing earlier this week. We will be carrying that service here on the Ideas Network, so that will be during the 10 o'clock hour of our program today. We'll reschedule for those of you who were particularly interested in hearing from the author of The Rule of the Klan, What an Ancient Form of Social Organization Reveals About the Future of Individual Freedom, which is a highly interesting book, an interesting thing to write a book about, but he will have to be rescheduled, and that will be probably, well, no doubt, someday next week. So that's the story. It's been a hard week, hasn't it? What a hard week. The news stories and then the story out of Texas yesterday and the loss of life there and the explosion at the fertilizer factory. It's just been difficult for everybody. So let me give you our phone number. We are trying to find Lisa, and I'm sure that many of you will probably have some stories about this pay gap. Some of the statistics in The Simple Truth are these. The largest wage gap exists in Wyoming, where women were paid only 67% of what men were paid in 2011. And the smallest, in case you'd like to venture a guess, is Washington, D.C., which has the smallest wage gap, where women were paid 90% of what men were paid. Earnings and the pay gap also vary by race, ethnicity. Hispanic, Latina, and African-American women had lower median weekly earnings compared with white and Asian-American women. Hispanic, Latina women paid only 59% of what white men were paid in 2012. And when compared with white male workers, Asian-American women's salaries show the smallest gender pay gap at 88% of white men's earnings. So this is what we hope to be talking about very soon. And here, I'll give you all of our ways to reach us. Our numbers are 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, if you would like to use that, and some of you already have on this issue, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. If we can get that up on our board, we might be able to start a conversation on this with our Facebook comments before we reach our guest. What else did I want to say? Oh, yeah, other big news yesterday, and this is certainly a story that we've been covering fairly rapidly, is the Senate vote on gun legislation yesterday, and we will be talking about that. We're just waiting a few days because of all the other news. So that will be a subject that we will discuss, and we are looking for guests who have been victims of gun violence. So that's coming up next week as well. We have found Lisa Matz, and we will be talking now about this gap in earnings between women and men. Lisa is Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. Again, for you to join us, it's 800-486-8655. She's been there since 2003. She also worked with the Legal Advocacy Fund. AAUW has been the nation's leading voice promoting equity for all women and girls through research, education, advocacy, and also philanthropy. Lisa, thank you very much for being with us. Whoops. Oh, I got the wrong line here. All right, here we go. Lisa, hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be back.
Thank you, Lisa. It's good to have you with us. So here we are again. Everybody is quite familiar, as you say, with the 77-cent statistic because it has been around so long. How long has it been around and why has it been around so long?
Yeah, it's one of those numbers. It's like a bad rash you can't get rid of. It's been around at least a decade in, you know, whether it's 77, 78, 76, right in that range. And we just can't seem to make that next leap in terms of closing the gap for pay equity. I think part of the reason why it's been around, and there's really actually really several reasons, but part of it obviously is that there was a recession. I think the other part of it is that truthfully, men's wages have been fairly stagnant. And so, when men's wages are stagnant as well, it's becomes even harder to close the gap. And the other thing that I think truthfully is that, we still don't have the laws that we need, to be vigilant in enforcing this. Yes, we've got laws on the books, but they aren't strong enough, and the folks who do the enforcement on the state and federal levels don't have the resources they need. And when you put all that together, at the end of the day, what you have is a persistent and, quite frankly, pretty pernicious wage gap that doesn't seem to be going away.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about this report that you've done and break down some of the very interesting statistics. I'm interested in this Wyoming, Washington, D.C., the highest gap, the lowest gap. Can you discern anything from that? Why is it so bad in Wyoming? Why does Washington, D.C. seem to be more equitable?
You know, for Washington, D.C., I know part of it is because it's the national capital area. And what you see there, obviously, are a lot of federal jobs that are that have a fairly rigorous kind of pay scale that they use, both in terms of pay and promotion. And so there is more equity there. When the federal government does research on its own pay gap, they still find a pay gap, but it's smaller than in the rest of the public. And so that's absolutely part of it. And then also in the National Capital Region, you also have some higher paying jobs as well. So I think that helps in addition to the fact that women in this area are often very highly educated. And for women, education is pretty much the best tool that they have to close the wage gap. It doesn't, you can't educate your way out of the wage gap. You can't negotiate your way out of the wage gap. But both of those tools can actually help to close it a bit. And we definitely see that in D.C.
And
for Wyoming,
yeah.
It's interesting because we just had some folks out there for their state convention. And the Wyoming AAW members had a whole convention looking at this because, quite frankly, they're tired of being last. And we're investigating as to why that is with Wyoming. We think some of it has to do with job sectors out there. There's mining, there's ranching, jobs that are male-dominated that are harder for women to break into, but that also, especially in the mining realm, can pay some pretty decent wages. And you can get those jobs with a high school education. And so we do think that's part of it. We also think some of the culture out there in terms of, say, the ranching, with how wages are stated and who's earning the money, it obviously is a very much a family occupation, a family job, but often it's just stated in terms of the head of household, which is typically the male. So there's a couple of different things there that could impact that for Wyoming.
Mm-hmm. Now let's look at this fair pay legislation. Tell me what has been before Congress and why it doesn't seem to be able to be put up for a vote.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we have two of, I would say, the most persistent and, quite frankly, committed leaders on this issue in Representative Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut and the great Senator Barbara Mikulski from Maryland. And they've done pretty much everything you can imagine. And I'm talking about, obviously, everything traditionally done in terms of letters and so forth to get co-sponsors, but also the more non-traditional, you know, twisting of arms and the use of some interesting parliamentary procedures just to try and continue to force votes and continue to vote force discussion on the Paycheck Fairness Act, which is their baby. And, you know, with the Paycheck Fairness Act, truthfully, we've passed it twice on the House side. But we could never get it passed on the House on the Senate side at the same time. Came close, but we didn't reach that 60 vote margin that everyone in the country is becoming so familiar and so frustrated with, as we saw yesterday with the gun vote. You know, you have to have 60 to move forward in the Senate. It's a supermajority. It's the rules. And if you can't get 60, you can't get a vote. And that's pretty much where we're at with Paycheck Fairness. Now, we're closer than we've ever been. I think at the end of the day, we could get upwards of 57, 58 votes, but it's still not 60, and that makes it tough.
And Paycheck Fairness, if enacted, would do what?
You know, the Paycheck Fairness actually, I think, is a very smartly crafted bill. It amends the Equal Pay Act, which is the first equal pay law that this nation put on the books pretty much 50 years ago. It would be 50 years in June. And since then, it has never been updated. So one of the things that we're actually trying to do is close all these loopholes. And quite frankly, some of these loopholes are about as big as a they could fit a Mack truck through them, quite frankly. The loopholes that have resulted over 50 years of litigation. And so what Paycheck Fairness Act does is talk more clearly about what appropriate defenses are in the case of differences in wages between men and women, how to better determine kind of localities so that, you know, when you're talking about equal pay, you have to have someone to compare yourself to and how you can do that in a way that makes sense, that's both fair for the employee and the employer. And also, quite frankly, one of the biggest things is a non-retaliation provision, because we believe that transparency could have great impact on this. But unfortunately, right now in this country, and Lilly Ledbetter, by the way, worked for one of these companies, it's perfectly legal in some instances to fire someone who talks about their wages at work or inquires about wage practices. So obviously, that makes it harder to find out if you're being discriminated against or if there's some kind of a gap in wages. And this bill would put that non-retaliation provision in place for everybody. Right now, only a few have that protection.
Now, those who are opposed to this legislation are talking about businesses being open for unfounded lawsuits. What about them?
You know, it's interesting to me because you get the same argument no matter what the bill is, whether it's about equal pay, whether it was about the Americans with Disabilities Act, pregnancy discrimination, issues dealing with hate crimes, whether you want to, for instance, also pass the ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which would obviously prohibit discrimination against gay and lesbian folks. You get the same argument. And oftentimes, and it's all about, we're going to get sued. We're going to get sued by people where nothing happened. They're just going to be litigious to try and squeeze money out of us. It's going to clog up the courts. And, you know, it's going to hurt our business, and we're not going to hire anybody as a result. And it's the same, as I said, the same argument you get that they got when we passed Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It's the same argument every time, and every time they're wrong. They said the same thing about the Family Medical Leave Act, that the sky would fall and business would end as we knew it. And, of course, that has not happened. So, you know, capitalism is a strong enough beast to deal with these issues. And at the end of the day, though, the free market doesn't deal with discrimination. It's not something that we've seen happen, and you've got to have some form of government protection, especially for those workers who can't protect themselves.
And what about, opponents say, there may be other reasons that men might earn more, perhaps differences in education, job tenure, differences in experience?
Absolutely. You know, that's the great thing, I think, about the Equal Pay Act and the Paycheck Fairness Act and the way that it wants to amend it, is that, of course, it keeps all those common sense reasons that reasonable people like you and I would say should contribute to a pay gap. You know, if someone has more education, has more experience, if they are more productive on the job, whether it's literally shuffling paperwork or making widgets or whatever it might be, if they have more seniority on the job, There's just those kinds of good reasons that we all know should impact people's pay that have nothing to do with gender. And those particular reasons are not touched by the Paycheck Fairness Act. Those are still prime defenses that that businesses can use. And if they can prove that, then they're good to go. The case won't even move forward. That's the first thing, the first hurdle that any plaintiff would have to get past. But the other thing I would say is that they often dwell on the whole notion that somehow we're going to create this, you know, this environment where everyone's going to want to sue. And at the end of the day, if you really look at the bill, the whole point of the bill is much more prevention than cure, right? We're really looking to have strong enough laws so that we literally have our business friends look themselves in the mirror and say, you know what, we finally reached the point where it's actually more cost-saving for us to do an audit or do whatever we need to do to make sure we're following the law now and do it ahead of time and just simply follow the law to begin with, then wait for some kind of a complaint and have to defend ourselves later. I mean, at the end of the day, you want enforcement and legal mechanisms that are strong enough to deter certain actions. And right now, with the pretty lame penalties that are involved if you are caught red-handed in terms of pay discrimination, it's just a cost of doing business. There's no incentive for businesses to do the right thing, and that's unfortunate right now.
And Lisa, what does it mean to get a petition to discharge to get this voted on?
Yeah, you know, this is one of the fun things that Rosa DeLauro is doing on the House side. You know, you have to remember the House and Senate are very different beasts when it comes to kind of their procedure and how they move bills through the order. And on the Senate side, we often see this 60-vote margin that clogs up the works and nothing can get done. On the House side, it's oftentimes very much kind of a fiefdom for whoever's in power, and it's the same for whether it's Democrats or Republicans. It's really nice to be king or nice to be queen, in the case of Nancy Pelosi when she was Speaker, because the majority rules. You get to do pretty much what you want on the House side. The minority can kind of scream bloody murder, lob some fireballs, but at the end of the day, it's really the majority doing what they want and pushing through legislation. There is, however, this one exception, and it's called a discharge petition. And this is where, essentially, a member of Congress collects signatures on a petition that would require the Speaker of the House to discharge a bill, that's where you get the name, discharge a bill from committee, so in other words, it can't get stuck in committee, and move it immediately to the floor for a vote. And if you can get 218 signatures on that, which is the simple majority that rules in the House, then it forces the Speaker to bring that bill up for a vote whether he likes to or not. And so what Rosa DeLauro is trying to do is to get those 218 signatures to force a vote. I think this is something, for instance, if you remember a few months back, we were talking a lot about the Violence Against Women Act. We knew we had 218 votes to pass the Senate vote. A discharge petition potentially may have worked there, although obviously they're always fraught with politics because for a Republican in this instance, going against your leadership can be a tough thing. At the same time, when it gets closer to an election, some of those allegiances go out the window, as we well know.
We welcome phone calls for Lisa. We're talking this hour of the program about fair pay legislation. Lisa Matz is Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. I would urge you to Google their website if you want more information about the study that they have done, The Simple Truth, which looks at the gender pay gap, and it breaks it down so you can find out what it is in each state in the country. It breaks it down by race, ethnicity, by education, and also by age. Everybody's familiar. It's on average 77 cent statistic. That's what women are making when you compare women and men, even in the same jobs. So what's up? That's what we're talking about this hour. I'm sure that some of you have experienced some kind of discrimination when it comes to wages. Some of you may feel that in certain instances there are reasons that men might earn more, and that it's maybe fairer than it would appear to be. And what about if you're in a business? Do you worry about some kinds of unfounded lawsuits that may clog up the courts? We welcome your phone calls, and here is how you reach us. 800-486-8255. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Lines are completely open for you at this moment. If you'd like to send an email, do that at talk@WPR.org, or our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we'd like to hear from you. Just an announcement about what we will be carrying at 10 o'clock. We will have live coverage from WBUR in Boston. There is a memorial service. The president and the first lady will both be attending the service in Boston for the victims of the Boston bombing at the marathon earlier this week. So that will be carried here during our 10 o'clock hour. We will reschedule the guest who we had scheduled for 10 o'clock. All right, to you in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your phone calls now. 800-486-8655 is our number. Once again, the email is talk@WPR.org, and the Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Again, we will be carrying the Boston Marathon Memorial Service during the 10 o'clock hour of the program. President Obama scheduled to deliver remarks at the service. First Lady Michelle Obama will also be attending. Former Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney will also be at the Interfaith Prayer Service for victims of the Boston Marathon bombing. Governor Deval Patrick, Democratic presidential nominee Michael Dukakis, and others will be a part of this important service. All right, let's go to phone calls. Lisa Matz, our guest this hour, Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women, and Janet in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Janet. Go right ahead.
Oh, I am so glad you have Lisa Matz on. I am just driving to school. I had to stop because I got so excited to hear her on there. She is the best advocate for women. The whole American Association of University Women is. So you have picked the best woman to represent us. I can't understand how so many Republicans could vote against this. Don't they have wives and daughters? It just doesn't make sense. Anyway, I am off to school, and thank you for having Lisa Matz, and keep talking on this subject because we deserve more equality.
Thank you, Janet, for your call. Lisa.
Oh, it's obviously, I got a fan there. That's wonderful. But you know what she's really right about is AUW. You know, we've been around for 130 years, and we are nothing if not persistent. We've been talking about equal pay since, I think, 1912, 1911. We did our own studies then. We talked with the Women's Bureau at the Department of Labor. We petitioned them to do a wage study. And we're just not going to give up. And there has been progress. I don't want to say that there hasn't. But at the end of the day, the reality is that there's still lots of stereotypes that are alive and well about women workers, even though we make up half the workplace. But lots of stereotypes about our caregiving roles and parenting, and that somehow because of those things, we are somehow, it's okay to pay us less, which is absolutely ridiculous, especially when you think about the fact that there are so many single women out there who are raising families. And really, just in terms of the fabric of this nation, we've always been about justice and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And women who are working and doing the same job as men should get paid the same as men. It's as simple as that.
Thanks very much for your call. Janet, let's go to Laura in Madison. Hi, Laura.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much. Could you help me understand a little bit more about the mechanics of how this happens? So, like, are there, if there's a large corporation, are there boards all across the country who have written into the bylaws that a CEO must pay a woman less than a man if they choose? Or do CEOs individually all have a mindset that if they hire a man, they're going to pay him $60,000, but if they hire a woman, I'm only going to pay her, you know, $54,000? How does it happen? Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Laura.
You know, there are a couple of ways that this happens, and I think some of them can be seen potentially as deliberate discrimination, but I also think some of them are literally just bad communication and poor procedures in the workplace, which is where I get back to the whole point of the Paycheck Fairness Act and wanting better deterrence, because when employers potentially face a stiffer fine or more legal problems, they're much more likely to get their house in order to avoid them in the first place. So I definitely think that there's absolutely still bias in the workplace about women's roles, as I said earlier. And while some people might not acknowledge them, and some people might not even be aware that they're making decisions based on that, it still happens. It's pointed out in survey after survey. But the other thing, though, is that the whole notion of the CEOs making policies to pay women less, that is absolutely illegal. It's not something that any corporation would do. It's really, quite frankly, a function of human frailty in many respects. It's a bias about women. It's also a bias towards men in the sense of their kind of breadwinner role. You know, ironically, a woman who becomes a parent can expect to see her wages decrease. A man who becomes a parent can expect to see his wages increase. Clearly, that makes a statement in terms of what society values and how they're going to reimburse people. I've always been a big fan of an open communication process because I think some of these disparities happen because managers don't talk to each other. Especially in a big corporation, you may have similar jobs across several departments and different hiring managers who are hiring folks and setting the wages. And this is where good communication and good human resources practices come in to make sure that they are assigning wages in a non-discriminatory way, that there is parity there when there needs to be, and that there are differences there when there needs to be in terms of difference experience and so on and so forth. So I think that happens. And then the other reason that I would say, and I want to say this one very cautiously, but I don't think I'd be disingenuous not to mention it, is that we do know that women are less likely to negotiate. Now, obviously, that means that we'd like women to negotiate for better salaries. The problem is that women are in a real catch-22 when it comes to negotiating. We all know that there's lots of unpleasant names that we call women who are seen as too aggressive. And so if you negotiate wrong, you could literally negotiate your way out of a job, let alone the wages you were trying to increase for yourself. So AUW has been doing some workshops with college women to really talk about the appropriate ways to negotiate, how to arm yourself with current employment sector data so that you can make the argument confidently about what you're worth and what that job is worth in the current geographical region and so forth. So I would say the bias, I would say kind of human frailty, and then also the negotiations probably adds up. The last reason, though, that is probably the biggest has to do with job segregation, and that is the fact that most women still have the same three jobs that most women had 50 years ago, and that is teacher, secretary, and nurse. And the jobs that tend to be dominated by women tend to be jobs that are paid less. No matter how much we may think they're worth intrinsically, they do tend to be paid less than male-dominated jobs. And so we have, on one side, a bias, even if you have women doing the same job and hopefully earning the same money. And on the other side of the coin, we have this job segregation that, in many respects, can severely impact women's wages as well.
So, Lisa, if suddenly those jobs became predominantly male, what would you see happening in terms of salary increases?
You know, it's interesting. Men who are in predominantly female jobs, so men who are nurses or physical therapists or administrative assistants, so on and so forth, actually tend to make more on average than their female counterparts.
They do.
They do. And there's some evidence that the more women enter what for them was a non-traditional field, and a non-traditional field is anything that's less than 25% women or 25% men in the case of nursing, say, but that when more women enter a non-traditional field, the wages actually go down. So there is absolutely a bias there about the worth of women as workers and the appropriateness of their compensation. And quite frankly, the United States is behind the times on this. While there's a pay gap, I think, around the world, if you talk to some of our Western allies, they absolutely have a much better handle on this. And part of this is because they have better work-life policies overall, so that the whole notion of who's caring for family and how children are raised is seen as a much more familial and community activity than simply something that falls on women's shoulders. Mm. And that absolutely has an impact on wages.
Thanks, Laura, for your call. Luke in Appleton, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to thank your guest for this fascinating subject. This brings me to a story about my mother. She worked in a all-male paper mill back in the 80s. At the time, she was a single mother and later married. But she actually got paid the same as the other workers, and she actually worked harder and got bonuses for that. I suspect it might be just to get the other workers to work harder because there's a woman competing. I want to get your guests' views on that.
Well, you know, I think that's an excellent example, quite frankly, of businesses who are doing it right. Number one, there are lots of non-traditional jobs out there for women that women can do just as well. Your mom, Luke, is a great example. Lily Ledbetter was a great example in terms of being a supervisor at a Goodyear tire and rubber plant, you know, extruding rubber and making tires. I think that that was a company that was doing it right, that probably had very clear policies. I wouldn't be surprised if it had a union, because union movement has contributed mightily to closing the pay gap, because obviously, much like the federal workforce, as I mentioned earlier, they have very clear pay policies that are very transparent. And I just applaud your mom, because she was working in a situation that was probably tough in many respects and trying to raise a family, but she stood up for herself and got what she was worth. And I know that made a difference for your whole family.
A Facebook comment from Lynn. I'll be tuning in, although I can't believe we still have to engage in this topic. I'd like to hear more about solutions to this problem.
Yeah, you know, there's several solutions out there. And that's the thing I think that for me as an advocate, and anybody else listening to this show that understands this issue, gets most frustrated with. You know, we don't have to have a pay gap. It certainly doesn't have to be as big as it is. And there are several things that we can do. Number one, we need to pass the Paycheck Fairness Act, pure and simple. That bill is going to close loopholes and create deterrence and empower workers in a way that will be useful for both employers and employees. It's got special help for small businesses. It's got better technical assistance and training for the EEOC. So it's really a holistic bill that looks at the whole range of why there's a wage gap. We're also, quite frankly, advocating right now, because we do know that paycheck fairness is stuck in Congress and that Congress itself is wildly dysfunctional at this point. We've also been advocating and pushing President Obama to issue an executive order. You know, from our perspective at this point, if we can't get it through Congress, then let's look at the pieces of paycheck fairness that we could do legally as an executive order and push the president to do that, so that in the interim, we're still making progress. The executive order that we'd like to have from him is about prohibiting retaliation for employees at federal contractors. So I mentioned earlier that the Paycheck Fairness Act would prohibit retaliation against all employees, which is great. But in the meantime, let's prohibit it against the contractors, the employees at federal contractors. They are living off federal taxpayer dollars, and they should be following civil rights law. So that's another thing that we could do.
And Lisa, is he amenable to an executive order?
I'm sorry to say right now that I'm not sure that he's as open to it as we'd like. You know, he's always been a champion of equal pay, and so I don't doubt his sincerity in terms of wanting to address the pay gap. The Lilly Ledbetter bill was the first bill that he signed. And so I don't believe in his commitment, but we are struggling getting him to understand that this executive order would be a great way to help move things forward currently. So we're right now doing a campaign at AEW, and if you'd like to come to our website and write a letter to the president, you can do that via our service on the website, and just let him know how you feel. It's something, you know, he's a busy guy. There's a lot going on. Just think about what's happened in the last week.
Oh, I know.
And so it's a hard thing, and so, but we still need to keep advocating and making noise about it, and it's the way that we'll get it done.
An email from Diana. How does the interruption of a work or career path by child-rearing responsibilities impact the wages of women? Do men who interrupt their work years to be stay-at-home parents experience the same wage gap?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We do know that for women who take time out of the workforce to raise kids, there's a devastating impact on their wages. Some of it is because, obviously, during the time that they're not working, they're not saving for not working in the paid workforce. They are not saving for retirement, and there are those kinds of issues. But once they try to come back into the workforce, there is not necessarily a whole lot of respect for all the work that they have just done in the unpaid workforce as a mother. And we all know that mothering in this day and age, especially those that are involved in community and so forth, involves many skills, but it isn't necessarily respected. So oftentimes women, especially professional women who may have law degrees or MBAs or have been nurses or whatever, end up starting much lower on the totem pole than they actually left because it's the only way they can get their way in the door. And it's a great bonus for employers because they get a really good employee who knows how to do it at cheap wages. It's oftentimes why I think a lot of women, even though it's a struggle, continue to work full time, even when they feel like their wages are being almost wholly sent to the daycare center, because it allows them to continue a pace in terms of their seniority and their career, so that when their kids aren't in daycare anymore, when they would have potentially gone back to work, they're in a much better place. As for guys who do that, there certainly are more men these days than there used to be who stay home with their kids. They do have that issue. It's not as strong. So again, there's kind of that inherent bias about those kinds of things. I think there's also an assumption that men who stay home to raise kids aren't really just staying home to raise kids. You know, he must have been doing something on the side. There must have been some small business, some other thing that he was doing, in a way that assumptions are not made about women.
Hmm. And there's another whole issue that we should talk about sometime, which is daycare. We've made such little progress on that over the years. It is such a financial burden, and it is just not very accessible. And all these big plans we had for having daycare close to your workplace and everybody getting involved in this and realizing it's a national priority, kind of gone by the wayside, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's part of the reason why AUW is really supportive of President Obama's idea about a pre-K initiative. I mean, universal pre-K in this country would be great because of the educational boost that it would give lots of kids, but also because of the child care issue. I mean, quite frankly, part of the issue there is that there's daycare out there now. It's exorbitantly expensive, and it's not very good. And so that's why you do have women making a decision to stay home, because they figure, if I'm going to spend as much as I would spend to send my kid to college, I might as well do it myself because I know I can do it better. But there are so many other than consequences to that come down the road, unfortunately. And women tend to be the ones bearing that burden.
We welcome more phone calls in a moment. Lisa Matz, our guest, Director of Public Policy, Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. We're talking about the Paycheck Fairness Act and why year after year after year, women earn 77 cents to the man who earns a dollar. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, leave your stories and messages there as well. We like to read them, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. After 10 o'clock today, we are going to have live coverage from Boston on the memorial service for the victims of the Boston Marathon bombings. The president will be there. The first lady will be there. Many former governors will be there. Mitt Romney will be there. And so it's an interfaith service, which we will carry at 10 o'clock this morning. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls now, we go to Peg in Rice Lake. Hi, Peg.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm going to use at least one word that you don't like, and you cut me off the air at the mere suggestion about 15 years ago, but I'm going to do it anyhow. I am getting old. I'm 77. I've been retired for almost 25 years, and I was forcibly retired because I filed a suit against my employer for wage discrimination. Okay. I've had almost 25 years to think about this, and I haven't gone senile yet. No one has told me I am, anyway. And so I have thought very carefully. And I say that the proper route in this battle involves controlled paranoia and a controlled belief in the conspiracy theory. Conspiracy was the word Kathleen really hate it.
Peg, I'm not sure what you're getting at. What's the conspiracy?
Conspiracy?
Yeah.
Why wages stay low. Okay, now I advise women, don't get lost on that. If you get too strong on it, you're going to be crazy. And certainly people will think you are. But if you go on believing in all innocence that these boys just don't understand what they're doing, you're not going to fight the right battle. Now, there are a lot of males who are perfectly fine. They are not ogres. They aren't trained to kill us. But they have been, they've grown up believing because all the other boys believed it.
All right, Peg, let's get a response from Lisa. Lisa?
Well, I think that what Peg is trying to get at is that for a lot of women, and I think if you talk to anybody who's been a victim of pay discrimination, you'll hear this, they were surprised. They were ashamed. They often took that on themselves. They felt like they had been good employees and didn't understand why the
yes.
employer was doing this to them. And in fact, you know, thought this couldn't happen to them. And so I think she's trying to say, you know what, at the end of the day, you need to realize this really could happen to anybody. And employers out there aren't out there necessarily to be nice. They're out there to make money. And they need to value their employees. Many of them do. But for those that don't, you know, we should not necessarily be taking things for granted. We need to listen to ourselves if we're feeling that suspicion, because it really can be a function of discrimination.
Yeah. Peg, thanks for the call. I'm sorry this is weighed on you for 15 years. You should have sent me an email and we could have talked about it. But there is something about unfairness that can drive you crazy, right? I mean, it's you feel like you're knocking your head against the wall. Fairness is fairness. We know what it is. We know how it should operate. And if you've been discriminated against in some way through absolutely no fault of your own, in fact, you've been a stellar employee, then you wonder, what in the world can I do? What's going on? It can bring you down.
Yeah, it really can, to literally feel ashamed, embarrassed, as if it were your fault.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that, you know, if you are able to get up the courage to file a lawsuit, which, by the way, is such a hard thing to do,
yes.
and so very few people actually do it. It's part of the reason why I just kind of chuckle when I hear our friends at the Chamber of Commerce say we're just going to have runaway lawsuits, because who wants a lawsuit? Because in these instances, you know, oftentimes you're retaliated against, even though that's illegal. They find ways to do it, just like with our friend Peg, who got fired for her trouble. They also start to make up things. You know, someone who was a stellar employee and had employee awards is suddenly someone who was suspect and under par.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they look into your personal background and really start to wage a nasty war to make you look crazy, literally,
mm-hmm.
And that you're making this up. Again, it's not something that anybody should have to go through, and it's part of why we want the Paycheck Fairness Act, so that we can increase those deterrents, so that employers just follow the law to begin with, and why we also want the president to issue this executive order for non-retaliation. Let's start there with the federal contractors, with the employees who work for them. And we can show the world that the sky does not fall and Chicken Little is not going to die if you can't retaliate against workers and if there's some pay transparency. So it is a tough situation, I know. And part of that is because it's been around for so long. But it's not without its solutions.
Yeah. Peg, thanks for the call. Kathleen in Madison, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if the Fair Pay Act has any provisions in it to allow workers to sort of know what their colleagues are being paid, because I'm wondering how you're supposed to know that you're being discriminated against if so much of that information is really confidential and held close to the vest by employers.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good question, and I'm going to try not to confuse people here, because there are two pending pieces of legislation that affect pay equity. The first one is the one I've been talking about largely this conversation, and that's the Paycheck Fairness Act. And it does have some transparency provisions in that it would prohibit retaliation against employees who ask about wage practices or who make the independent decision to share their wages, in other words, how much they make with other folks at work, oftentimes in an effort to see if they're being paid fairly. There is another bill out there by our friend Chairman Harkin from the Senate Help Committee and Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, a former EEOC chair who knows her stuff, called the Fair Pay Act. And the Fair Pay Act is much more about comparable worth. Gets much more into the job segregation issue that I mentioned earlier as one of the drivers of the pay gap. And it does have much stronger transparency provisions. You have to be careful with this because, you know, in some instances, wages are actually kind of proprietary information. If you think about folks in Silicon Valley, how much you're paying your top programmer is really a state secret because you don't want them to be lured away, correct? So you do have to be sensitive to this and understand that there are business reasons why you need some privacy here and perhaps also personal reasons on the part of employees. At the end of the day, though, there is a way to do it that the Fair Pay Act has enunciated in terms of some transparency by job category versus transparency by name, and transparency in a more specific way in terms of reporting to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And that is a way, I think, that Chairman Harkin and Delegate Norton feel we need to look at some of these job-segregated jobs, because we need to really be able to compare jobs that are female jobs versus jobs that are male jobs and figure out a way to pay them fairly. There's comparable worth studies out there, for instance, and actually Minnesota at the state level did one 20 years ago and is still working to increase women's wages in certain job categories because they were so far behind. But they're still working at it. That's the key. In Long Island, they did a comparable worth study and found out that they were paying their groundskeepers more than their first-year teachers. That was an independent comparison of the skills and the training needed, and it made them right the wrong. And those are the kinds of things that we need. But that's the Fair Pay Act. It's kind of the next leap after paycheck fairness.
Thanks very much for the call, Kathleen. Laura in Manitowoc. Hi.
Hi. I want to blame our mothers-in-law. And, of course, I say that facetiously, a little tongue-in-cheek. And I, you know, my mother-in-law is certainly not to blame. She was ahead of her time. But, you know, that generation of women were the ones that were really fighting the fight, but I think something was missed, which was that, you know, they were raising sons at the time. I'm the mom of two kids who are almost two different generations, and I'm constantly amazed at how nothing has changed, that moms with sons these days don't seem to be preparing their boys for having a wife who's going to be working. You know, they'll have the daughters empty the dishwasher and do domestic things, but the equivalent is, well, yeah, but he takes out the garbage. And I think that that's the mentality that carries through when they are employers and employees. The expectation is that, you know, the women are going to take care of all of that. So we now, this generation of moms, can do a lot for the next generation of women that are going to be in the workplace by fostering that sort of, you know, equal mentality at home.
Lisa?
You know, I love that comment because it not only is it so true, but it plays itself out over and over. I mean, if you think about it, what we do sometimes with kids is literally put a gender on a job. So girls do dishes, boys mow lawn. Girls clean the bathroom, boys take out the trash. And they're not necessarily always comparable, right? I mean, mowing the lawn is once a week. Doing the dishes is, you know, several times a day. But we've gendered these jobs. And so the notion that somehow you can put a gender label on a job and that that's okay and that you can also value different efforts, value the same effort differently is a problem. Believe it or not, there have been studies that have shown that there's a wage gap in allowances.
Really?
Because it literally starts that soon. And so I think that that just shows you how deeply ingrained some of the assumptions, some of the things that drive our parental decisions and then potentially our decisions as both employers and employees can be, and why it is so pernicious, why it's been so tough to move, because we're talking about ingrained beliefs, things that people don't even realize they're acting on that are influencing decisions and having an impact on the incomes of their employees.
Lisa, thank you very much for the highly informative, interesting hour. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know I love coming back. Let me know when I can be here again.
All right, you're on. Lisa Matz, Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. Go to their website for a wealth of information, or www.aauw.org. You can get more information about the study that they did that looks at a number of issues. It's called Simple Truth, and it's the intricacies of the gender pay gap broken down in many different ways. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Katie Mattson for production of this show. And thank you, everybody, for all of your calls and emails. After 10 o'clock this morning, we are changing our programming due to the nature of what's been going on in this country this week. We'll have live coverage of the Interfaith Memorial Service for the victims of the Marathon bombings.